here. Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami is doing something that's standard in terms of Vedic literature, but it's really standard both in all types of literature and teaching technique. And that is that he presents a synopsis of what it is that he's going to be talking about. And I was just looking somewhere, and he points out, because he's not quite sure that he's actually going to have time to finish the whole book, so he wants to summarize it first. And generally that's the way, that's the standard teaching technique. You tell people what you're going to teach them, then you teach it to them, and then when you finish, then you tell them what you taught them. And that's how it comes out to be three times. So beginning and end are a summary, and in the middle is the main thing. And Shastra also works like that. You see, for instance, Srimad Bhagavatam ends at the 12th canto with this lengthy summary of all the cantos of the Bhagavatam, all the chapters of the Bhagavatam, and more or less what's being taught there. And so it serves these two purposes. One is that it helps really focus people's minds on the subject, and the other is that it gives the author the opportunity to write down something very important that, if it's very long, he may not have the opportunity, for some reason or other, to complete. That was Srila Prabhupada's intent with Krishna book. I remember it was in 1970 or 71 when Krishna book came out. And of course Prabhupada also points out why he wrote Krishna book, because he didn't think he was going to get to the 10th canto. Or he may not. As it was, he just touched it. He just got as far as the 14th chapter, and there's 90 chapters. So it was good that he actually did that, and he did this summary study, same thing that he did with Chaitanya Charitamrita in the form of teachings of Lord Chaitanya first. And Srila Prabhupada said, well, actually the real essence of Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna's pastimes, is the 10th canto. So, but Prabhupada really started churning out Bhagavatam when he was already in his 70s. He had his first three volumes of the first canto, but Prabhupada had gone into the second canto already when he was in the West. And Srila Prabhupada already sort of calculated the pace that he was working, that he would really have to live quite a long time. I mean, you can imagine more or less when Prabhupada was, after 10 years, in his 80th year, Prabhupada started the 10th canto in Bhubaneswar. And that was already in 1977. And Prabhupada started it just at the Lord Nityananda Trayodasi. That's when he finished the 9th canto, and then he started the 10th canto. So that took him 10 years. And that's less than half of the Bhagavatam. So that would have meant that he would have had to live at least another 10 years to complete the 10th canto, and then 11th and 12th. So Srila Prabhupada made that decision early on, that no, better that he just give an overview of, and he called it Krishna book. And that's the essence, because all of the first 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam were meant to qualify devotees in order to enter into Krishna's pastimes. But that's what the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam is, because that's what the sages are asking. They want to know the essence of what they want, essence of all wisdom. But they say, well, tell us about the pastimes that Krishna and Balaram enacted when they appeared. And so Sutta Goswami's responding to that, as he heard it from Sukadeva Goswami. Of course, one could ask, well, why we give the first 10 cantos if Prabhupada didn't finish the other 9, which would qualify them to read the first 10 cantos, then how could you enter into that? And of course, there's different aspects to that answer, but one is because Srila Prabhupada said, I already put everything I wanted to say in the first canto. So Srila Prabhupada, because he wrote the first canto, hustled with that idea in mind, that maybe I'm not going to finish, even get past the first. So whatever he wanted to say in terms of spiritual realization is already there, either in expanded form or in a sutra form, already in the first canto. So if you study the first canto carefully, then you'll be qualified to read Krishna book. And that sort of simplifies things. In other words, the other 9 cantos are also in there. And the other aspect is that in Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada didn't just translate, he actually gave his running commentary, and that running commentary includes all of the teachings and the essence of the other 9 cantos as well. So as he's going along, Srila Prabhupada is qualifying his reader. And it's something that devotees, if they study Prabhupada's books very carefully, particularly if they have access to commentaries of acharyas, then Srila Prabhupada's, anyway, everyone realizes Srila Prabhupada's genius in some ways, but particularly his literary genius and empowerment in presenting Shastra becomes very, very evident. I remember when I was first doing Venugita, and there the chapters are all based on commentaries of Shri Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And translating all of that stuff and then seeing what Prabhupada put in the running verses as well as the sort of commentaries or preaching that he added to it. You see that Srila Prabhupada, when he translates, he's actually putting all of the essential points of the commentaries that the acharyas give into just his translation of a verse. So like the other day we were talking about this issue about Prabhupada, how he translated for meaning, not he translated just word for word, and because that's often the idea, you know, you should just, that's what the academics say. He says, don't tell the people what it means, let them figure it out for themselves. So you're a materialist or a neophyte devotee, you know, let them figure out what it is that Krishna wants to say. Don't have the self-realized acharyas explain Krishna's words. Everyone should just be free thinker, and they should just, you know, either figure it out from themselves or give their interpretation. After all, everyone's idea is equally good as everyone else's. But that was Prabhupada's whole point, is that his duty as a realized acharya is to make Krishna's words, and even Krishna's words are relatively easy. Bhagavad Gita is easy, but Bhagavatam is very complex. There's a verse or a saying that the test of someone's scholarship or one's scholarship as a in Sanskrit and as a scholar is tested by the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is very complex, and it's not for ordinary people. Bhagavad Gita is generally very simple Sanskrit, and Krishna is quite straightforward in how he's speaking. So Srila Prabhupada would include explanatory, even when he's translating, you find that he often is actually already incorporating statements from the acharya's commentaries into the translation. And Sridhar Swami is the basis of all translations, all commentaries. He gives very often very, very short explanations, and then everyone follows or expands on what Sridhar Swami says, and you can see that trend is there. Although Sridhar Swami's style is also very unique, because he isn't actually giving his commentary specifically to Shuddha Vaishnavas. His commentary is particularly geared at Mayavadis. Because at that time, Mayavadis were both challenging and at the same time dabbling with Bhagavatam. And he was using their type of terminology, their type of logic in order to bring a personal understanding to the Bhagavatam. So very often he's, the way he approaches it is the way they would approach it, rather than the way just devotees would ordinarily approach something. But anyway, everyone still follows, even though he has a very particular slant, everyone still follows his methodology and his points. And then, Sanatana Goswami, his specialty is that he will give four or five interpretations to a verse. He'll say, it could mean this, it could mean that, it could mean that. And then other acharyas like Jiva Goswami and Vishwanatha Chakravarti, his specialty is that he always gives these explanations in the form of a running dialogue. So if you've seen, like, for instance, his explanation of the Gita, so he gives another conversation. It's like this sub-conversation going on between Arjuna and Krishna, as if Arjuna and Krishna are actually speaking like that, but that's how he's explaining the main verses of the Gita, and he does that same way. He does, particularly in the 10th canto. So what Srila Prabhupada does is he takes all of these things, he takes all these purports and sometimes these explanations, and sometimes he takes, in his translation, he takes things right out of someone's tika explanation and he puts it right into the, it's not in the verse, he puts it into the verse because it makes it so very clear, and it adds depth, it can add so many things. Sometimes it may add humor, or sometimes it adds some extra taste or rasa to what's being said. It's the expertise of the acharyas. So by doing that, therefore simultaneously, oh yes, I was talking about Prabhupada's brilliance. So in the same way, Prabhupada had this extraordinary empowerment that he would present Srimad Bhagavatam and he would present the 10th canto, but simultaneously he would also be qualifying his readers for the stuff that they were actually reading. And yet he would make it so simple that actually very often devotees, just by the nature of Prabhupada's language, his logic, he makes everything so approachable that people would sometimes, devotees, because there's a whole class of devotees who say that Srila Prabhupada didn't necessarily present everything in his books or didn't teach anything. And generally those people say that who haven't read Prabhupada's books. Because when you read Prabhupada's books, then you see that everything is there. But Srila Prabhupada will present everything in such a way that you can go out on the street and you can distribute it to materialistic people. Starting with Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and no one will commit an offense by what they're reading. And Prabhupada simultaneously is presenting his books that they're suitable for non-devotees, suitable for devotees, or neophytes, intermediate devotees, and advanced devotees, according to your level of consciousness, you'll be able to extract things, what you need for your Krishna consciousness out of Srila Prabhupada's words. And that really takes empowerment. That just doesn't come from. I remember, well, we were talking about one of our devotees, ex-ISKCON devotees, who went and joined another group. And while he was still distributing books, he was still distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. And his explanation for was that because the acharya of the book group that he joined, he said, well, everyone knows that Prabhupada's books are for the masses. He says, this is not for the masses, this is just for devotees. So it isn't anyone that can actually do that, to actually present Krishna consciousness in such a very extraordinary way that it's almost like, it's like the air. You're sitting here and, I don't know, there's 1,000 radio waves going through this air, and those radio channels. So according to what music or what channel you want, you just tune in, and in the same air, different channels come out. So you can listen to, I don't know, jazz music, rock music, Krishna conscious music, you can listen to the news, you can do so many things, but all you see is one thing, which is the air. So same thing in Prabhupada's books, you just see one thing, but according to, you know, what you're tuning and or how you're tuned, then you can extract all kinds of different extraordinary things from Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And it's simple, nice, digestible for everyone. So that's really empowerment. That's what it means to be empowered. Now, let's just...